Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Pharmaceutical Commerce Podcast. I'm Nico Saraceno, Associate Editor of PC. Joining me today is Innes Meldrum, Senior Vice President and Chief Commercial Officer for Otsuka Pharmaceuticals US, a healthcare company. Today, among various items on the agenda, he'll be discussing the challenges that can appear during commercialization, along with the value of patient education.
Let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and we'll be right back with Innes.
LabVantage Solutions is a global leader in enterprise laboratory software solutions that improve customer outcomes by transforming data into knowledge. Its intelligent LIMS platform features advanced analytics, state-of-the-art AI, and mixed reality technologies that enable revolutionary advances in the pharmaceutical industry by drawing greater insights from broad data sets. For more information, visit labvantage.com.
Innes, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on the show today. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So, generally speaking, Innes, what bottlenecks can arise during this commercialization process?
The answer is fairly broad because there's a lot of different aspects and things can get kind of tangled up there. So I think one of the first bottlenecks that can occur is that if you don't have alignment across your internal functions on what needs to be done by when, and that really requires very strong project management to make sure that your plans are in place and being tracked appropriately. If you look at some of the external factors, let's start with the FDA, the regulatory authority. You are hoping to get a certain label, which based on whatever's in your label, that's what you're allowed to market to and what you can claim. However, you often won't know what your label looks like until the very last day. Now, the challenges with that are that if you end up getting a label that isn't what you expected, you may have to change all of your printed materials, you may have to change your marketing strategy, et cetera. So you have the option, you can print at risk, but then you may have to discard a lot of things there. So the regulatory is really one of the first ones. Another one's manufacturing. So can you meet the demand? Do you have the product available? Can you ship it out so that it's available for patients, for physicians to prescribe in the time frame that you want? And we all know over the past couple of years with COVID, supply chain, a lot of issues there. So that's a big one. Marketing. Depending on the claims you want to make, you may need to pre-clear some of these with the FDA. So even after your product's approved and it's approved to be promoted, depending on how you want to promote, what claims you want to make, you may have to pre-clear those with the FDA, which can take a period of time as well. Other areas that you need to be aware of is reimbursement. So a physician may want to prescribe your product, but the patient's insurance may not cover it. And that always takes a period of time working with either government payers or private payers, and you need to negotiate with each of those, and they work to their own timelines rather than yours. So that's another one. If you're going to promote to patients, you can't just come straight out of the gate and promote to patients because physicians are going to prescribe. The physicians need to be aware of, comfortable, and bought into your product and that it's the right product for a given patient. So even if a patient comes in and said, I heard about this product, if the physician doesn't know about it, hasn't bought into it, whatever, then that's really going to be another bottleneck. So it needs to be a sequential order. So you really need to get the regulatory approval, make sure you can get the product on the shelves, make sure physicians are aware, then patients, and all of that needs to happen pretty seamlessly. But as you can imagine, there's a lot of places where that could go wrong. So a whole series of different bottlenecks. But the importance of your first year out, usually the success of the lifetime of a product is defined within its first year on market. So if you don't get these things right and you have a few things that go wrong or bottlenecks, as you call them, then that can really fundamentally damage the long-term potential of the product. So it's very, very important that you start planning early, that you have a very good plan and that, you know, everybody's aligned around it.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it sounds to me like patience and optimism, certainly a huge factor that's needed in this kind of process. Obviously your experience does speak for itself in terms, you know, in this space. You have 30 years of leadership experience and knowledge in not only the pharma space, but the tech space. How would you say this type of experience better prepares you to handle these challenges and navigate them? How does that kind of like simplify the process a bit, would you say?
Hopefully after 30 years, I've learned a few things. I've also learned what not to do. And one of the benefits of experience is that you make some mistakes along the way, and hopefully you learn with them. So I've probably made my fair share of mistakes, but hopefully I've been smart enough to learn from them as well. So I think that the key thing that is you over anybody gaining this amount of experience, they understand the process and the different steps in the process and how it needs to fit together and where it can go wrong. You know, we talked about the bottlenecks there. So I think it all starts with the people. So you need a really strong team of people underneath you that you can trust, who know exactly what they're doing, who hopefully also have that kind of significant experience, certainly in the areas that they're responsible for. I think the other aspect is the importance of a strong plan. Whenever you're launching or beginning to commercialize, you really need to start very early. So I've seen and I've made mistakes where, you know, we've tried to start planning 6 months before launch. That really isn't enough time. I would say a minimum of 18 months. The challenge, because of the complexity, everything that needs to happen, how everything needs to line up at the same time, you really need to start planning well in advance. You need to ensure that organizationally, everybody across the organization has a clear and consistent and common view on what needs to happen. What needs to happen by when? One of the keys at the heart of this is the patient. Ultimately, this is why you're doing it. You're doing it to help patients. But you need to have a very clear understanding on what is the unmet need? What is the patient situation? What's the patient environment? And it's no good just me as a leader having that view. The whole organization needs to have a consistent view on it so that everybody can take decisions that are all in the best interests of the patients and that everything lines up, as I said. As I mentioned, you need to start early, really a minimum of 18 months before. Now, for a lot of companies, that they may not be keen to do that because that means that you're expending a lot of cost. So you're investing a lot up front. You still don't have an approval. There's always a risk that you may not get that approval. However, if you don't make that investment up front and you leave it to the last minute, you're significantly increasing the chance of things going wrong and not having a smooth launch. And as I said earlier, really your launch in the first year on market defines the long-term success of the product. It doesn't mean that you can't be successful, but you may have to, if things didn't launch well, you may have to relaunch it, which is a significant additional cost. And over time, you'll never reach the same heights that you would have otherwise. I think the role of leadership and the benefit experience is you know what questions to ask. So you know some of the things that could go wrong. And depending on asking those questions, the way I think about it is if I ask the questions, if I get a good, confident answer, then we're probably in a good place on that aspect. If I don't, or people avoid the question, they maybe answer a different question, then it's time to dig deeper. Because that's usually a signal that there are things wrong. Maybe people don't want to highlight that to senior leadership, but that's where you've got to dig in. And really, the linchpin around all of this is a really, really strong project manager. Very strong plan and a strong project manager who's really coordinating everything together. Because if things start to go awry, you should be able to flag that as quickly as possible, and then you can take steps. The longer you leave it, the worse it's going to be and the more difficult it will be to actually resolve that. So really, I think it's understand the process, ask the right questions, have a really strong team in place. And at the heart of that needs to be this common view around the patient. What's best for the patient? What are we trying to achieve here? And I think if you get all of those things in place, that really optimizes your chances of success.
Before Otsuka, you were VP of Marketing and Sales at Orexo, which for people who may not know, manufactures pharmaceuticals and digital therapies to help address mental illness and addiction. Could you provide an example of when you were successful in utilizing patient education?
Absolutely. So at Orexo, they're really focused on helping patients suffering from opioid addiction. And obviously, I think most people are aware, unfortunately, there's a opioid epidemic in the US. I mean, it's unfortunately, it's got even worse during COVID. So As part of that, Orexo was a new company into this space with a treatment called Subsolve to treat opioid addiction symptoms. And they, as a result, they needed to establish themselves with the physician and patient population. So one of the key insights that we learned was that at that time anyway, 60% of the treating physicians, and it's a very small number relative to the size of the US, but 60% of those physicians actually were in recovery themselves. So they'd gone through it. So this is more than just a job for those physicians. This really is a calling. I mean, their emotional investment, they understand what the patients are going through, their level of empathy. So in order for a pharmaceutical company to be credible in this community, we needed to demonstrate that we truly understood the problem, we understood the patients and what they were going through. And I think it's important that pharma recognizes the role they play. Really, our role is to partner with physicians and their staff to help them to successfully treat patients, which is their main goal. So we need to recognize the role we play within that approach. One of the things within addiction is that, as I said, it's really a calling for many of these physicians and many of their staff who work with patients. So we developed a campaign called Out the Monster. And Out the Monster was really about highlighting that opioid addiction is not a moral failing on the part of the patient. It's a chronic brain disease that patients are unfortunately genetically predisposed to. And the whole goal of that was to recognize that we understood the disease, which is a very insidious, deceitful, horrendous kind of disease. But the disease is separate from the patient, and that the patients deserve empathy, they deserve love, they deserve support. And I think that without the monster, we were pretty successful in being able to delineate the two and position the disease as the monster and the patients as deserving of support from obviously the medical community, but beyond that from a societal perspective. And what we developed as a result of that was a series of patient education materials to really connect with the patient. And that was included websites, digital solutions, as well as physical solutions. And one example was we developed a booklet that really told the story of the monster and addiction and finished with separating between the disease and the patient and finishing with message of hope for the patient. But we received a lot of very positive feedback from patients and physicians that they felt we'd understood the disease. And that importantly, the tools that we developed for patients, really the patients found extremely helpful. They found it gave them hope, but it also provided education for them. And the physicians were happy to distribute those materials because it was helping them in their goal of helping patients recover from what is a devastating disease.
Most definitely. And obviously, it's a completely different topic. And shifting over to Otsuka, and I know there's you kind of got into the importance of empathy and sympathizing and finding ways to really sympathize with the patient. How have you been able to apply some of those lessons and that knowledge to your position now and what you're doing at Otsuka?
I think the key thing is what started with, pharma needs to understand the role it plays. And I think it's a very important role, but it is one cog in a long machine. You know, in most cases, we provide pills that can help patients. And even now, some treatments are actually curing diseases, but for the most part, it treats symptoms. So our goal, I think, is to really partner with the physician community, understand our role within there, understand their challenges, so we can better partner with them to help them be successful. The best way we can do that is understanding the patients. And I mean, really deep understanding of the patients, the disease state, how this impacts patients' lives, what they have to go through living with this disease. And you really need to dig deep. It's easy to develop a superficial understanding for this, but unless you truly dig deep, really understand this, you're not going to be credible. Obviously, patients live with it every day. Physicians are treating it every day. So we need to work extremely hard to actually understand these disease states. And I think once you have that understanding, it's important that your whole organization has a common view on this. So whether you're in IT, whether you're finance, whether you're marketing, whichever area or function you work in within the company, having that common understanding and empathy for the patient situation allows you as a company, I think, to be successful. And it's really that alignment. And it was something that last year we restructured our whole go-to-market model around the patients to try and drive this common understanding across the whole organization so that we're all pulling in the same direction, that we can all, regardless of what function, regardless of our role, we all understand how we're contributing to better patients' outcomes, to making patients better, and to partnering with the physician community to do that. And it's early days, but so far so good. And I think it gives more meaning to everybody's role beyond just it's just a paycheck and this is what I'm taking home. There's an emotional connection and a sense of purpose, which I believe, you know, increases engagement across the organization as well.
And you're all working towards a common goal despite the department that you're in. I think that's a big point to point out.
Exactly.
And before I do let you go, Innes, I wanted to look ahead to the future, say over the next decade or so. How do you envision this future of commercialization and patient support shaping out as we move forward here? What kind of promise do you see in that?
So I think that if we take a step back and you look at the macro trends, pharma's been a highly profitable industry for a significant period of time now. A lot of that's been driven by the ability to take price increases on the products on an annual basis in the US, for example, which doesn't exist in other countries. I think those days are coming to an end. There's recently been laws passed by the government that's going to change that gradually over time. So what that's mean is there's going to be increased pressure on the bottom line for pharma, which means that the pharmaceutical companies need to become more efficient at how they commercialize, how they develop and commercialize products. Technology, the benefit of technology is that it allows you, if appropriately applied, to increase efficiencies. And I think that is the leveraging of technology to optimize the commercialization process is really in its infancy within pharma. I think we're starting to move forward in that area. One aspect of this is omnichannel. So omnichannel I define as being able to deliver the right message or resources to the right customer, and that could be a physician, it could be a patient, at the right time. Right now, a lot of pharma activities are very disjointed because you've got sales reps out, you've got digital activities, you may have mailing, etc. It's not coordinated. The data and technologies available to us now allow us to integrate and coordinate that. And different industries, consumer goods, for example, are way ahead on this. But I really think that's the opportunity for the pharma industry. And I think in order to change people or an organization, you need a fire lit underneath them. That fire will be the pressure on the profits. So I think pharma is going to be forced to accelerate the adoption of technologies and fundamentally change how we do things, making sure that it's as efficient as possible. Now, the key thing that cannot be lost within that is that understanding of the patient. I think that the companies that are able to continue to dig really deep, really understand the patient, invest in the technological infrastructure, and bring those learnings together, I think will continue to be successful as we go forward. But I think we're going to have to be much more targeted, much more insightful than we've been historically, which has been very much a throw a lot of resources at things and hopefully some of it will stick. But that's going to be it's going to require a mindset shift because most pharma companies are set up to do the latter. And that's one of the reasons Otsuka, I think, was quite progressive in making the decision to actually change how the go-to-market model works and really understood that this is a change that's going to come. It's arguably here, but it's going to accelerate over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, and like you said, it's easy just in general to throw money at something and really lose sight of really what you're striving for. So hopefully we can keep the patient in mind, like you said, and you know, just throughout this whole process, just you know, never lose sight of the end goal. So I really do want to thank you, Innes, for taking the time today to kind of discuss all things commercialization and how the patient is really, they really should get the attention that they deserve and how important they really are. So thank you for taking the time today. And we really do appreciate it. We're looking forward to see what Otsuka continues to do here down the road here. We'll definitely keep an eye out.
Thank you very much, Nico. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners, be sure to stay in the loop of our latest updates via our website at pharmaceuticalcommerce.com or on our SoundCloud page. Take care, everyone.